Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone, welcome to this edition of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. I'm joined this week by one of my former bosses, which is probably should sound scarier than it is, but it's not, because he's the very nice Alex, hashtag green o' green, all the way from Rhode Island. But if you listen to this man say hello, you will find out he is, in fact, not from Rhode Island or in the USA. Alex, greetings from the third world country you're currently in. How's it going?
It's going absolutely fantastic, Daz. I'm pleased to see you again, mate. It's a long time. I know we've been chatting back and forth on Facebook. I think it was last time I seen you in person was 1972. Great year that was.
It was.
Lots progressed on since then, mate. But yeah, absolutely happy to be on the podcast, mate, and see what's going on.
Brilliant. We should start off with a disclaimer because there are people who listen to this around the world, and this one will have to have subtitles because it's a Glaswegian speaking to somebody from Northern Ireland. So we'll do it like an old record player. We'll get people to play it on a lower RPM.
Yeah, a little bit slower and that kind of part. So what you're saying here is don't do the voice when I pull up to the drive-thru. Hi, ma'am. Can I have a large iced coffee, half skim milk and three equal? So that's what I do every time I pull up. I used to go to McDonald's in the drive-thru, try and say my stuff very fast. And I couldn't even get a Big Mac meal. I even slowed it down to say, can I get a number one? You want what? A number one? What? Oh, Jesus Christ. Just give whatever you've got. I'll take it.
And hang on. And just to clarify, how many years have you been living in America?
This year's my 20th year in America, mate. 20 years.
Well, do you know what? I love that you still have your fucking accent, man. So fair play to you.
Yeah.
I don't, also, this podcast as well is you can kind of say what you want. There's no language restrictions because obviously if I tell a man from Glasgow he can't swear, you tell me to go fuck
yourself. Yeah, you're fucked. That's not going to work out. Yeah, you got it. No, it's funny actually. So my accent definitely changes here and there. I get it more when my wife notices it when I'm on the phone, and my mates back home, she sees it change. Even when I'm just texting a message on WhatsApp, she kind of notices my accent changes. Don't know how she does that, but she does. Now, when I go back home, my mates dig me up for the way I sometimes talk to them. They say I sound very Americanized. So you can't win, mate. You definitely can't win, you know?
Fully agree. One of my friends said to me on this podcast, he said, you sound a little bit American. And I was like, well, I've never lived in America, so I'm not totally sure how the fuck that's happened. But
did you ever make it over here on your travels? You know, you went to, what did you say, you went to Asia, you went to...
Lived in Canada whenever I worked for your good selves. I've been to America. I've been to Boston. One of my cousins lives there. But
anyone that's Irish and somebody has a cousin that lives in Boston, that's always the way.
He's very pro-Trump these days, so we haven't been chatting much.
Yeah, what happened to him, mate? Did he go over here? Did he get married to a Republican or what happened to him?
No, he moved over in 86 and he's living the American dream. He arrived as a poor Irish immigrant and now he's a rich old white dude. So Trump's the guy.
Looking for those green cards. It's amazing though, right? I always notice this. Ireland's one of those countries where pretty much everyone loves to bring them in from. Like, there's a lot of less restrictions to get people into Canada or else. You're just happy-go-lucky people, what can be said? Whereas Glasgow and Scotland, you're kind of considered as a mean, horrible bastard, which is kind of hard because we're nice as well.
I think so too. Like I said to you, whenever I was in Glasgow, I was telling the story. If you've ever seen some of my stand-up live, I do a story about Alex. And the bit is called The Unicorn. And people actually don't believe that you're real. So I'm really glad you're on the podcast because... It sounds, comedians will preface a lot of stuff with, they'll start a story by saying, can you imagine if, and I tell this story and I'm like, this is fucking true. So we're going to do a little bit about the company you work for and then we're going to do the unicorn story because we're going to break it down and do it right, okay?
And that was just a little part on that piece. I took your saying of the unicorn, which I love, and I actually apply that when I find someone who's basically British, but they have an American passport. I call them a unicorn as well. So there's quite a few people out there that for some reason by a distant relative or a mom or dad, they've got an American passport. They've never been to America, but they're eligible to come here and move here. And I call them a unicorn. So that was inspiration from yourself, Dazza.
Oh, cool. Well, obviously, yeah, because then it makes it easier for you guys to bring them over on the visa program because they've got their own passport.
Yeah, exactly. And super. Calling someone a unicorn, everyone loves to be a unicorn. Fans, cool, big, long knob. It just makes things absolutely outstanding, you know?
We'll get to that story in a minute, but so Alex, you are vice president of Challenger.
Correct.
What's the full title of the company? It's Challenger Sports, right?
Challenger Sports. So I'll give you a bit of background on that part. The company's been going around for about 35-40 years in that region. Started off in Kansas, right in the middle. No idea why they picked Kansas. I thought they went for, hey, if we're going to stake a land to take over, we'll do that and we'll spread out the way. Started with maybe like, four or five staff members who would go around, do camps in a certain area, and that kind of progressed. And then the one thing we had mainly a lot of, and the reason why I got involved, was soccer camps. So those camps started to progress all the way through the US into Canada. During the early 2000s, they spun off and they had other lines of business. They had their own uniform range where they do that. They're partnered with Under Armour. They do tournaments. So it's a big thing over in America for teams to get together for little tournaments, short-end versions, Memorial Day, Labor Day. They do trips to the UK as well and then different parts of Europe, which is quite cool. So we get teams from the US and go, hey, you're going to go to Spain and play against teams or go to the UK. I've done that with a lot of parts. And then the area that I'm in charge of is our academy division, where we can go to soccer clubs and say, hey, it's all well and great having staff during the summer. Would you like someone to work with your parent coaches in the fall or the spring or so on and so forth? So that's the area that I kind of mainly look after. And yeah, it's been wide varied and changing, you know, just talking about in terms of staff. And, you know, up until probably around about 2009, 2010, the company was predominantly British staff that we got from obviously the UK and, you know, Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, so on and so forth. We then branched out, we partnered up and had a company called Tetra Brazil. We had a lot of Brazilian staff. But over the last probably 5-6 years, it's changed a lot in regards to our staffing pool. We do a lot more recruitment of local Americans and college players over here to kind of give them an opportunity to progress up. So we changed the name of our camps from the British soccer camp and the Tetra camp. We made it the international camp because really it's kind of tough when you're sending an American lad along to a British camp and people waiting for that accent. They're like, oh shit, he's good at Alden McDonald's. He's fantastic. He speaks the lingo perfectly, but he's actually really an American. But yeah, it's company's changed a lot, but it's been a fun ride.
Can I start out by saying, you absolute pack of bastards, it was called the British soccer camps when I worked for you, so I couldn't tell anybody back home who I was working for.
You're going to get shot when you're back home. Bang, boom, there's Daza.
But people were saying to me, there's like a little group of alumni of people who've worked for the company, and somebody said to me, does anyone still have your jersey? Do you still have your shorts? And I was like, fuck no. Yeah. I went and found a Protestant friend to give that to when I got home.
That's right. It was the big game, the one with the kind of Union Jack in the front, wasn't it? Is that when you were doing the camps? Is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there is one photograph of me working for Challenger.
Oh god, yeah, I try to keep that like this. Well, it's funny that I remember when we first did camps, we were partnered up with Zara and they gave us our uniforms and we started to make our own. I'll tell you what, the camp jerseys we had, I think it was 2002, was this big giant, it was almost like wearing a wool cagoon, those big giant thing, but you were absolutely sweating on it during the summer. It was murder. Absolute murder. But they've got better than that since then. But now it's very much a plain Jane international camp. Take it easy. We're not trying to sensationalize. We did get an inspiration of what's her name? The bird in it, Jerry Halloway and Spice Girls. Remember she wore that that dress at the Brit Awards? That's where we took it from, you know what I mean? That's what I'm telling people anyway. That's what I think.
And dressed me up in it, also a sexy ginger. So that makes complete sense. Thanks very much.
But it does exactly. I'll tell you what you want, but you don't really want. I want that dress. No, I don't want you on it. Don't want to have a Union Jack vest. There we go.
I want that dress in uniform form right now. I'm also very delighted as well. Obviously, the running joke is I've just got somebody from Glasgow to say the word murder. So fucking yes, happy days.
But there's been a murder. That's tagging. I remember those back in the days. There's been a murder. Exactly. It's funny that, right? I remember sitting down with my flatmate several years ago when, right, and I hadn't watched Target in a long time. He's like, I can tell you who the killer is going to be in 2 minutes. And the lad did an act for it. He's just, boom, he's the killer. He was absolutely fantastic at Cluedo as well. He was brilliant at that. I could tell you right off the start of the game who's actually killed the person who'd done that. He was amazing at it.
He's way ahead of the game on this thing.
But oh, the guy's a genius, man.
So pretty much what happened was whenever I worked for Challenger, I had already moved to Canada. So you guys have an international program where you recruit from universities basically, and you get students to come over, you give them the full training that they need. They go to a training camp. I didn't do training camp, you see. So
yeah, because again, so the situation in Canada is a little bit different. You said the visa you normally get for 2 years and it's not tied to any one company, so you can work for various areas. A little bit different in the US. The two main visas that staff come out on are a J1 visa, which is a summer visa, which lasts for around about 4 months, and that's mainly used for kind of the month of kind of May, June, depending on which state you're in, runs through till August. The other visa we have is the H2B that runs for 9 to 10 months, depending on where you are. They usually start in January or February, and they start in April. But those are the two main visas that most staff, they come over.
I will tell you now, as a cultural experience, the J1 visa, every Irish person that goes to university usually goes to America on a J1 visa. People will do at least one summer in America, in New Jersey, in New York, wherever, just working on the beach, making a nuisance of themselves.
That's all part there. I mean, it's funny, right? One of the best parts of the job that I've enjoyed over the years is I look back and I see staff that, that come in and they're you know, young, scrawny, not much, you know, knowledge about the world. And then you see them progress on and how well they end up, you know, the confidence grows and all that kind of part of that. I was speaking to a lad the other day, a boy called Jack Drew, and he was only a young kid when he first started with. He's done about 2-3 years with his, moved to California, ended up doing a scholarship, playing a little bit, got married, he's having a great time. And that's one of the best parts. I love seeing people grow and how they develop, because it's not always going to be perfect when you come over here. No job is and no lifestyle is, but if you take a positive on it at each point, it'll move you on in a better direction.
I think if you're young and you're opportunistic and you're kind of willing to roll with the punches, Challenger is going to be one of the best summers you ever had. And there, I know there's people that went and did 4 or 5 summers. People at university went one summer when they were like 18 and went, I'm going back, and just kept going back. I did 2 summers with Challenger, which was great. I did the first summer where I traveled all around Ontario. And then at the time I was living in New Zealand. So I went back there and then came back to Canada and ended up as an in-house coach for High Park FC in
I remember that one. I remember
in
that
Toronto
one, yeah.
So I was living in the city of Toronto in a really lovely house with a great host family who I'm still in touch with. I'm still in touch with a couple of my host families. That's one of the parts of the program for the listeners is, I mean, you need somewhere to sleep, and the good people of America and Canada, when you go over there, if you're coaching their kids, they will volunteer to take you into their homes, and they'll keep a coach for a week.
It's funny you say that, actually. That definitely is one of the best parts. It's a tough one to try and explain, especially from the UK, because I'm sure if my mum, if I was into basketball back in the day, my mum sitting and said, hey, listen, I want big John from Washington's going to come in and stay with us. I don't know how they would take to it back home, but over here it's a little bit different. And that's probably, just as you said, they're one of the great experiences. When I first started in my camps, there really wasn't Facebook, or the internet wasn't as prevalent, so you know, you kept in touch with them as best you can. But I've got one family I met probably my 4th week into working for Challenger. So that maybe will be July 10th or something, the year 2000. And yeah, we just clicked. Amazing family. They're called the Adams family. They're not the crazy weird people you see in the TV show. They're just great people. And I've stayed in touch with them for years. I've been to their daughter's wedding. They came to my wedding. And I've been to a couple of christenings, a few other things. I've met families through the years that sporting events and stuff just to catch up, and it's amazing, you know what I mean, because that's the one part there, getting to meet people and see what's different in people's lives. It's all part of it. Staying in a hotel is good, but you actually stay with someone that lives in South Carolina, someone that lives in, you know, Los Angeles, you really get a better feel for exactly what American life is like.
Yeah, they know, I mean, they know their own town, and they'll show you the proper experience. It's like arriving somewhere on your holidays and trying to figure out somewhere to go, whereas if you meet somebody who's from there, they're like, Do you want to go to a nice restaurant? Do you want to go to like a bar that we don't tell the tourists about? I'm like, yeah, let's do all that.
And the funny thing is, right, always when I did the camps, I did camps between 2000 and 2006 before I moved out here full time. And I would go back home and I would tell stories to people about, yeah, I did this, did that. My mates in the pub are like, you're lying, mate. What the fuck are you on about? Or else it's a case of they look at you and I'll say to them, what's changed with you guys? And it's all been the exact same. Notice my little American colloquialism. No one ever says you guys. That's an American thing that I've got into. They're just like, nothing's changed. I mean, I had the opportunity. I went to Graceland. I seen Elvis mulling around. Went to the Jack Daniels distillery. And I went to the OK Corral, the gunfight, the OK Corral. Went over there. Done that in the West Coast. Been to Hollywood. Yeah, pretty much been there, done it, seen it all. Been in the White House, all those kind of carry-ons. New York, Philadelphia, West Philadelphia, born and raised. Outstanding place. You know, that's a line I always test people on. If someone says, I've been to Philadelphia, I know about Philadelphia, I always go, West Philadelphia? If they don't reply saying born and raised, well done, that's it, conversation's over. You have to say that.
You're like, you, sir, are no crack. Fuck off.
Yeah, you're no good to me. You're done.
But, I mean, obviously, you were saying you're from Glasgow. So when your initial trip out to America, were you recruited like from a university, or how did you get the job?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what happened there is, for some reason, when I was a kid, I always wanted to move to America. It was always my dream and goal. And I actually had family in Canada, in London, Ontario, which wasn't far from Toronto. So from the age of kind of 15, 16, you know, I was at school or at college. And I used to basically go stay with my family in Canada for about a month each time. And I'd heard, there was a few guys that we played football with in my school. One of the lads went first. He came back and said, oh, it was a great experience doing Challenger. He'd recommend this other lad to do it. And back then, we just got chatting. Somebody said, oh, yeah, go to America. So I called up You know, back then there wasn't a lot of emails and all that kind of stuff. So called up, had a recruitment day, went down the recruitment, done the session, and then got invited to America. And the funny part there was I was told I was going to Atlanta. No clue where Atlanta was, no idea where it was going. I think I told everyone in my work, was working in Safeway at the time, putting beans on shelves. I think I said to them, listen, I'm going to go out and be a chicken farmer. That's what I thought I'd be doing for some bizarre reason. Went out of that, had an amazing experience, and then just passed on after that. Because I used to do a bit of recruiting for Challenger in Glasgow and just find people. And once you've had that experience, you want to pass it on. So that's how I got into it. Kid that I went to college a year above me, I went to school with a year above me. He told me about it. I got involved and I passed on the knowledge all the way down. Kind of like your American Pie. Remember that book in American Pie?
All the tricks.
Yeah, kind of like that, mate. Not quite as graphic as that, but that's what I kind of passed on. Go to America, you'll have a great time.
I ended up, when I finished up my first summer of Challenger, I went back to New Zealand for a little while. So pretty much winter was coming. I was like, fuck that. Back to New Zealand because it was coming into their summer. And there was actually a Scottish lad whose family had moved to New Zealand that I was working with in Christchurch in New Zealand. Yeah. Wee guy called Struan Elliott. And Struan was like, oh, I'd love to go to America. And I was like, get in touch with these guys. And I put him in touch with Challenger. He ended up working in the South. He ended up working in Texas. Had the best time. He's marrying a girl from over there.
Well, you know what? Give me 2 seconds here, mate. Because I actually think, and you know, you talk about like strange worlds, how things kind of come together at the last minute. I'm pretty sure I seen his name on a staffing list. Struan Elliott, Elliott Struan. Yep. That's a weird thing because I don't know who that guy is, but I literally seen him on a spreadsheet no more than half an hour before coming on a call. He's going to work for us this summer. That's bizarre.
He's a very nice lad from Scotland, but his family have been living in Nelson in New Zealand for the last couple of years. The last time I saw him actually was last year when I was out there traveling. I did a bit of a tour, so I got over to New Zealand and I made sure I went and hung out with Struan, and he was telling me all about his Challenger times and how much fun he had. And I was saying to him, I used to almost fucking melt when I was working in Canada and he's working in Texas.
You had to go heavy on the old suntan lotion, didn't you?
Absolutely, buddy. I came away as pale as I went out, basically, because I don't tan. I pretty much just sunburn. But no, the camps were class, man, because when I first initially got my job for Challenger, I was already living in Canada, but it just meant when I arrived out, I was staying in a house. It was a mate of my brother's, basically, and he said, you can stay here for a few weeks until you get organized. I got the job for Challenger, and then they were like, well, we love a house for you to stay in every week, and then if you're going back to Canada, or if you're going back to Toronto, you can either stay in the hotel with us or you can go back and stay in your mates. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And that, because I love traveling, that let me travel. I went to a different town in Ontario. It's brilliant, man. It's the best. If you want to truly see somewhere and experience it, and especially when some of the states, because I mean, obviously lots of people want to go to New York or want to go to Boston. Yeah. But if you really want to see the proper America, go and work in Kansas, go and work in Nebraska, go, you know.
I'll give you a funny stat for that, which I know is to be true. And we'll do it as a little bit of a question as well. So the first year you come out with Challenger, you don't have a choice where you're going. You just basically, whatever weeks you say you work, that's where you get placed in, that's how it works out. Where do you think about 90% of the returning staff ask to go to? Where do you think they end up asking?
Where do they want to go?
Yeah, where do they want to go? So the second year you get a request of where you can go. Where do you think 90% want to go?
California?
Yep, California. Yeah. Now here's the funny part. In your third year, about 70% request to go back to whatever region they were in the first time they came out. So average person has, say, 3 years with Challenger. They do 1 year in Kansas or Atlanta or whatever it is. And then the next year, they go to California, try that, and then they're back in their own region. Same with me. I did it when I was 2000. I went to Atlanta, no clue about it. Done 9-10 weeks of the great summer. Got my application in early for the following year, went across to California, had a good experience, but third year I went back to Atlanta just because I was like, you know what, I know it there, I like the people there, and yeah, there's so much more to it. You know, I mean, the same thing, you watch certain shows on TV, you know, you used to assume there only is a California, New York, but there's so much more here, it's nuts.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, definitely, I mean, you spent all those years living in Kansas as well, so when you were working down there.
Oh, no, actually, I didn't make it to Kansas, I didn't live there, I was basically, my main areas that I stayed in, I was in Atlanta, North Carolina, South Carolina, went to California, went a few crazy trips to, like, I went to St. Louis one time where they have that little arc, that part there. And then, yeah, back up to New England and staying in this neck of the woods. And The good part about New England is the driving's not as bad. Everything's a little bit closer together, which makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, you're in Rhode Island. I know that. I have a cousin in Massachusetts, so I think in one day we drove Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island. We just kind of did it like a loop, and you're like, Maine, you know, that kind of thing. There's six states. I was like, okay, that was easy.
Well, that's the funny part you mentioned. That's part of the driving experience. Like, you know, back home, I was looking at it. Well, if someone said to me, drive an hour and a half, I'm like, whoa, that's too far. In America, if you want to pop out for a cup of tea, drive an hour and a half, just part and parcel of the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's an exciting part.
I was used to that from having previously lived in Australia, which I foolishly told my boss, basically the lovely Joe Medcalf. I told him that I was like, yeah, I don't mind driving. So the first day I got there, my first drive was from Toronto to Ottawa, which is 5.5 hours in a thunderstorm, and I'd never driven on the other side of the road, or the other side of the car, sorry.
Yeah.
The first thing I did in Canada, and I immediately thought I was going to die, was I went out and I, you know, boop, opened the car and sat in the passenger seat.
It's funny you're saying that though, right? And I look at the technology and stuff. Nowadays, you get GPS, all that stuff. When I did the camps, there wasn't even MapQuest. You'd literally get in a car Sunday, you'd get your pack, where you're going and all that stuff. You get in a car with a couple of complete strangers, and you've got to drive 5 hours to the next location. Person next to you, it's kind of like National Lampoon's Vacation. Person's got the little road map going, follow this road, and you've got a bit of written paper saying, you know, when you enter town, you'll see a McDonald's, turn left, drive past the pharmacy, stop at that number, get a payphone, because there's no cell phones either, call the family on the payphone, can you meet them there? It was just absolute bonkers, but you managed to get by, you know, I mean, you managed to survive.
Yeah.
Although nowadays, I can't even drive down the street without knowing where I'm going. I need my GPS on just to turn right in my next street and have a clue about it.
When I was working there, it was kind of half and half between your pack still contained the Google Maps printout, you know, like turn left here, turn there. But obviously everywhere you go in Canada is like, once you get out of the city, it's like drive west for 6 days.
As long as you can.
But I know it was mad just doing that stuff. And then, as you say, getting in the cars, I used to call, I mean, you're talking about being like National Lampoons. I used to call it on Sunday. I used to call it the cannonball run. Everybody run out and getting in the car. to see what car you got, you know what I mean? And I was very lucky, actually, because I got a couple of nice cars, so I never complained.
Well, that was always the exciting part, obviously. You know, what car you're going to get, and then what your host family is going to be like. So you always get to the destination. You don't quite know who you're staying with. Family might show up. You're like, you look good, you look nice, you have a little look at the parking lot, the pool, then the Mercedes, we're going to be all set here. I'll kind of attach myself to him. So it's almost like speed dating a little bit. You're trying to find a family that works out for you. It was always a bit of a nightmare if it had already been assigned, and you're like, yeah, I didn't luck out this week. But the family's by and large, I mean, the saying I always go is the faces, not the places. That's what makes a difference in life, you know what I mean? Because you can have the best time ever in the middle of nowhere, or be somewhere that's packed and it's just average. The people make it. That's the key in life.
See, what I used to love was, I mean, through no fault of his own, Joe used to do a thing where, because I was a little bit older than the guys, so when I started for Challenger, I was 29, was my first year, I'm 34 now. So whenever I started, he would be like, obviously, like, I mean, I'm not going to complain. I'm not as precious probably as some of the younger people. You know, I'm like, right, I'm very used to just, you're given a job to do, just fucking do your job. So I got, you know, I would get some of the bigger, the longer drives, and I was like, whatever, it doesn't matter. And then it would be if we were staying somewhere on my camp, I would be like, well, look, let the other guys pick where they're staying, or you pick where they're staying, and wherever you think might be, you know, not the lushest pad or whatever, I'll stay there. I ended up staying on an Indigenous reservation in Sault Ste. Marie in Ontario, and it was one of the best weeks of my life. I learned about an entirely different culture. It was really, really interesting.
Yeah. And that's the whole part there. I mean, it's completely wide and varied. Like, I remember Lance Armstrong, after everything went on, he ended up being a host family. He hosted some of our coaches. And that's, you know, there's been a few crazy ones over the years. There was a guy that was in Anchorman. He was a host family. I can't remember what his name was, but he wasn't a host family for Challenger. It was another company. But, you know, people are willing and open to bring them in. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I always look at it as my kids that I have now. I really want them to travel. I want to meet other people, see what's going on. Because it opens up your eyes. You know, unless you've actually been out of sight where you're living, and went to another place and traveled around, you really don't know what's going on. It prepares you, and it makes you so much of a stronger person at some level.
Definitely. I mean, there's definitely something to be said for in the modern world where everything is so easy and convenient. like you're saying, when you started in 2000, people give you directions written on a page. You know what I mean? That's a real test of a person. It's just like, it's sink or swim shit. Just like, you have 5 hours to get there. It's a 4 hour drive. That gives you time to stop. Don't get lost and good luck.
Yeah. And it's funny as well though, right? I mean, the way the world's kind of changed now, it goes in both ways, right? It's amazing that you can jump on YouTube, you can get videos of anywhere or where you're going. Like I went to Spain a couple of years ago with my U18 boys team. And I basically thought, I'd never been to Spain, which normally is a bit strange because most people in Glasgow go there all the time for the holidays. And I literally, Googled it, got YouTube up, and I just seen more about it, what it looked like. Back then, you never had that. You had to, whatever you thought it was, you went there, you found it. And yeah, I mean, the world's got easier, but at the same time, it's a little bit harder. I think people are less willing to kind of open up and do things just because they can look at it on a computer.
Yeah, well, we should probably cover basically how you and I met, which was ladies and gentlemen, I don't mean to show off sometimes on the podcast about the places I've been and the stuff I've done, but...
Yeah, you do. You always text me about a fucking second this week. Look how good I am.
Alex and I actually ended up in Shania Twain's hometown. That's where we were.
Oh, you think I'm crazy? Actually, I was going to play that on my iPad, but no. Okay, yeah, keep going. Yeah, Shania Twain's hometown.
Yeah,
now, you went to the party at her house, didn't you?
We were in Timmins, Ontario, so that's where, which is...
You went to her house for a big party. That's another challenging thing. You always exaggerate a story a little bit. So you didn't stay with Shania Twain?
No, basically what happened was I actually, when I found out it was Shania Twain's hometown, and then the next fact I found out was they have what were voted the first and second worst roads in Canada.
I know exactly. One road in, one road out, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're both the worst roads in Canada. It's basically a town. It's about the size of the town I'm from, actually. It's 30 or 40,000 people. But we were doing the camp there. And it was 7 hours north of Toronto. And this is the main thing I remember about it. The directions had one turn. The directions to Timmins had one left turn at Sudbury. And that was it. It was north, turn left, and keep going fucking north.
Well, it's funny. If you remember a couple of times, I had to go visit some other clubs.
That's right.
I drove down that road. I can't remember the name of the towns, but I drove down a road. Same thing. And then... the GPS didn't work. You had it in your phone. I remember Joe saying to me, listen, it's going to work, but then you're going to lose data. So you can't pull off. You're just going to follow this road. If you stop, you're screwed. And yeah, I went a few different places. But like you said, you've got your wits about you. You're all right. You figure it out. As my mum used to always say, as long as you've got a tongue in your head, you're never going to be lost. You can just ask someone for directions. The only problem on that road, there was frigging two gas stations in the space of about fucking 150, 200 miles. So if you didn't stop at that point, you were screwed.
Yeah, if you, one of the main things about anybody traveling, my advice will always be never let your car get below half tank. Just pull in and fill it up if you're worried. It's the way to do it.
A last quick funny one on that end is you bring back a memory. I was in Roswell, New Mexico. So I went there, done a camp there. I always make the joke they had an alien there. They had a goalkeeper with 10 arms, could save anything that moved. So I was there, and on the Saturday morning, we had a day off, and we're driving down. I was trying to get to Arizona. So I looked at the MapQuest, and another lad, and we're like, it's going to go straight down here. It's going to take 6-7 hours. There's a road right through. I'm just going to try that one. Worst decision I've ever made in my life. It was mountains. It was God knows what. It took me 12 hours, which if I had stuck to MapQuest, would have took me 4. Learned my lesson that way, because we ran out of fuel. We're almost coasting down the hill with no gas. Let's just try to get down from this mountain. Stupid idea, but it made sense at the time.
You were absolutely at risk of getting fucking eaten by Bigfoot or something there, weren't you?
Oh, I think there was a couple of bears a few times. I had a lot of loot going. What the fucking Yogi and Boo Boo are like? What are these clowns doing here? Let's get them head up and solve it.
I just love the idea of you running out of fuel in the middle of nowhere and wiping down the window and a bear just going, you ain't from round here, are you, boy?
Yeah, okay. Well, it's funny you say that as well. I remember one time, I was staying with a family, great family, really, really good family. And the neighbourhood wasn't great, but the people were just amazing. And as you know, when you're travelling place to place, you know, you very rarely kind of take any of your clothes out. You kind of keep it in your suitcase. So I came home for this family one time. It was like 4 or 5 o'clock after doing camp. My suitcase was empty. I'm like, my suitcase? Because outside, half the people in my neighbourhood were all wearing my clothes. The kids had dumped it, grabbed the stuff from it. It was all about a crack, a bit of fun. I was like, what the hell is going on here? Absolute madness, man, madness. But yeah, they got the clothes back. A couple extra bits to wear.
I was going to say, you get temporarily robbed. I've never heard of that before.
Oh, it was me. I just remember that. I just pulling up and like, what the hell's my clothes? And I can just see people walk around. It was kind of like coming to America when Eddie Murphy leaves his stuff there and people just grab all the stuff. Same deal, same thing, but I walked it all right.
Yeah, well, basically, whenever Alex and myself, you ended up, I think you were just up, was it like a recon mission or what were you doing up? Because you ended up working with me. You were like boots.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, in the company, you're about 4 or 5 pay grades above what I was doing. So why the hell were you out helping me coach kids?
Because that whole part there, mate, is like, if you have to get your hands down and dirty, you got to do it. I mean, we all get into it for the right reasons. Even all the managers in the company, we all coach kids. We're all involved at one point. So we needed people to go there and help out. And obviously, there was a lot of meetings we had to do as well up there. That's why I kept traveling to the meetings. So if I can help out, I would do it in a heartbeat. I even do it right now. I mean, like, even now, I mean, I'm 20 years with Challenger, probably 23, 24 coaching. I still do mini kickers on a Saturday morning. I do that every fall. Nice. Club do it, and I absolutely enjoy it. I mean, I have a U16, U18, U20 team that I coach. Didn't manage to do it this year because of the whole virus situation. And then I have the youngest kids that I coach, the mini kickers 3 to 5, and I enjoy them both equally. Because if you can't enjoy yourself while coaching, what can you do? I mean, it's one of the best jobs in the world. I mean, you have a water fight, you run around, you teach soccer, you kick a ball around. It's amazing, and you get paid for it. Why would you complain?
How long did it take you to be able to say soccer?
Do you know what the funny thing is, right? I'm glad you mentioned that. I don't know when it happened, and I'm assuming it's going to be 2006, but it's embarrassing to say, and I'm sure your listeners are going to go nuts here, I can't call it football anymore. I struggle. I genuinely struggle.
Plus, you're from Glasgow, so is it not football?
It's football. I get the ball at the park, punt it in the park, get all done, you're all right.
Yeah, F-I-T-B, you're not going to know how to spell that word, football.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. But no, in terms of that part there, I'm not used to it because I do like American football. I'm daft on that, absolutely daft on it. So I follow that a lot, I watch that a lot, and that's football, and soccer is soccer. It's embarrassing to say, but that's the way it is.
Now, it's different for me because I had no problem saying soccer because obviously being Irish, we have Gaelic football here.
Yeah.
So to us, that's football. I say that's football. And then, when I was growing up as a kid, I would play soccer in the morning and football in the afternoon. So for me, it was different. I was like, oh, yeah, soccer, whatever.
The way I normally judged, when FIFA came out, the new FIFA came out, they never changed it to FIFA soccer. It's always FIFA, it's never changed it to FIFA football. It's FIFA soccer. So that's why I know it. As long as the little characters running around, we'll be all right. We'll be fine.
Yeah, well, pretty much. I was just sort of, because obviously that was one of the fun things to do with the kids. You know, they would be like, are you here to teach us soccer? I'm like, I'll teach you football if you want, but, you know. So it was but the story I wanted to tell was about whenever we were up in Timmins, and we used to do a thing after matches where we would get the kids to do a match report.
Now, I love that.
What would happen was we would pretty much encourage each other. It kind of sort of helped develop their social skills as well, wasn't it? It was like, can you get up in front of your friends and tell us what we just did? What you know, how good was the game? And we'll exaggerate them and make them feel better about themselves and be like, oh, Danny was running down the wing. You want to see the cross he hit in, and Benny was up there with a header, you know. So we'll do all that and get the kids in on it. I got really excited doing a match report. So I was pretty much trying to show how the kids how to do it. And you were there. And I said, I think I said something like, you want to see the fucking pass that wee man hit?
What did he say? The accent. Just skim through it.
Because I just didn't reference it at all. And I looked at you, and because my first thought was, that's me sacked. But you were laughing.
Well, I think some all depends if they get the humour. If you go quick enough, they don't pick up on it.
Nobody
caught
me.
That's the funny part on that piece.
Yeah,
you're funny. You made it through. You're not in jail, mate, so you're all right.
Exactly. Nobody caught me. Basically, I looked over at you expecting to be sacked, and you were laughing. And then after the camp, I was like, oh, mate, I'm so sorry about that. And you were just like, don't worry about it. Let's go get a beer.
No, but that's all part. I mean, you know how these things happen. You do slip out. It's amazing, though, right? Being from Glasgow, I do swear a lot, but when you're on a coaching field, you find ways around it. But you're talking about little things like that. I remember I did a camp again down south. And do you know what shagging is? Like, you know the difference between shagging and shag, right? You know what the difference is there?
What, you mean like shagging how we describe sex and a shag carpet? Is that what you mean?
Nah, so basically, So shag is called a dance, right? And there's shagging where people are dancing. This is a big thing down south. Okay. And, it's one of those funny ones. You know, I remember staying with my family. And not knowing this, they were like, oh, yeah, Emily's going to go shag tonight, she's going to be shagging here, and she'll be I'm sitting there going, what the hell have I, what the hell have I, you know, meet me, what are these people up to? It kind of worried me a little bit because, you know, I couldn't research it. And then one very other quick one, that family I was mentioned about before that I'd stayed with, great family, one of the best people in the world, the Adams family. I said, I went to their daughter's wedding, they came to my wedding. When their daughter was maybe 19, 20, that's not the year, that's just roughly, she was 19 or 20.
Yeah, that's that.
And I remember she stayed in my house for a few weeks, just friends, great person, great, you know, great, great girl. And we were getting into the town one night. When she came in, she sat down, she's like, you know, hey Alex, I felt a bit awkward there. I came downstairs and your mum was chewing your sister out. And that's got a totally different meaning from where I'm from. So I was just, and the taxi driver that was taking us in, the taxi driver looks around and he's like, what the fuck is going on with you? And I'm just like, can you give me more context on that? What she meant, she was yelling at them, having a fight. My head went somewhere else. The taxi driver nearly crashed the car. It was a mental comment, but it was fun. It was all resolved.
I love that, man. That's great. Cultural misunderstandings, as it were. That's definitely what it was.
There could be loads.
I used to coach with a wee guy called Stuart. Stuart is from over here, but he had this will lead lovely into our next story. Stuart had a Rangers tattoo.
So it wasn't Stuart Andrews, was it?
Is it Andrews? Maybe I'm not totally sure. You might have been telling him. He's from Newton Abbey. He's from just outside Belfast.
Not too sure, but is he? I'm pretty sure he's a really, really small guy, right? Small lad.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. So we were chatting. I was chatting to one of the parents one time, and basically me and Stuart were talking, and then, you know, obviously the guy thought we sounded a little bit similar. Now I'm from down near the border. I'm from about 40 minutes away from Belfast, so I don't have the full Belfast accent. And the Canadian gentleman basically said, he's like, so where are you guys from? And just to be obviously taking the piss, because a joke me and Stu would get, I said, well, he's British and I'm Irish, but we're from the same place.
Yeah.
And the guy was like,
that was always back in the day. I mean, people would always assume that you were English, or you're from England, or you play a few games, go, guess where I'm from. And, you know, I've had weird stuff thrown at you. Australia's the number one. For some reason, my neighbours, when I first moved in here, were convinced I was from Russia. No idea why they thought that. I kept, you know, like, I'm from Scotland. One of my other neighbours that I met, he thought I was from Sweden. So my nickname in my neighbourhood is the Swede, even though I'm not from Sweden, but everyone just assumes I am, and that's what they call me. I'm the Swede. So I just went with it. It sounds good. The Swede sounds like a little bit of a cool kind of vibe. Sweeney, the Swede. I am the Swede on the street.
I know. Hang on. You can't be doing that, because what I learned on that camp as well is you already have a superhero alter ego. You are the Cat.
I am the Cat, mate. I am the Cat.
Right. So Alex has several nicknames. Greeno is the main one he gets called in work. The Cat is his alter ego. Now, the Cat makes appearances. Alex, whenever you do this with the kids, you have to, I mean, you usually have to nip off and get something, don't you? And then the cat takes over.
So what I normally do, depending on the age with the kids, I usually keep telling them the whole week, listen, here's the situation. You've got a game on Friday. That's what we're building up to. And you're going to try and beat the Cat. But no one beats the Cat. No one beats the Cat. Because no one beats the Cat. And it goes on and on and on. And the Cat has a whole crazy, mad name. Ivor Gafonovich, whatever it is. I go into the nip in, get the gloves, get the full kit, get the goalkeeping top, ready to rock and roll. And I basically do everything I can to stop any ball getting anywhere near them. And I usually take a couple of nil lead. I trounce them at the start. But in true American style, escape to victory. The kids in the second half rally back, a little bit like Liverpool back in the day. They rally back and they somehow beat us by a goal in the end up. But it goes on forever, holds them up. And usually what I tell the kids, a little bit scary, I say to them, listen, here's the whole deal. If you got to bring all your toys, all your belongings, and we're going to play for that. If you win, you get your toys and belongings back, plus you get a nice prize. If you don't win, I got all your toys. I've never took any kids' toys, but builds up the excitement a little bit.
Yeah, it's great. One of the things I used to have to do was I would organize a game on a Friday. So when we had like the sort of graduation stuff, if there were parents there, I would encourage people. I would be like, we're going to play a game with the kids, because we used to do coaches and kids. And then if there were parents there, I would say, come on and play a game with us. At least twice, I had to remind parents to let the kids win.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, and maybe you're going to get fired now for backtracking on this part. That was banned several years ago, but it was used in somewhat. We banned it because there was parents who literally would just smash balls at kids, knock them down. As you said there, they got all major competitive. But
we wouldn't bring the parents in straight away. We would play as the coaches and be like, look, everyone, look how well the kids are doing. They're taking it round the coaches. Yeah. And then people were like, you should join in. I'm like, whoa, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, but the closing camp ceremonies are amazing. I mean, that back in the days when I was doing the camps back in the early 2000s, they were a big, big thing. So we literally make flyers up, tell the parents. We'd say to the kids, bring your grandparents, bring your budgie, bring your cat, your dog, bring your neighbours as many as you could. You used to get probably about 100, 150 people to like a 50-kid camp. It was huge. What we used to do in ours, we used to basically do a big game of a 1 to 10, you know, it's 10 steps to heaven. They do different skills and stuff. We get the neighbours up. You just basically rip them for about 10 minutes. We'd done a little race, and the kids would always win that, and they'd got all the parents lined up. They had to sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, or Britney Spears, I Hit Me Baby One More Time, something like that. So we always done that piece. And we used to always finish off with a game called Cowboys and Indians, which eventually got banned as well. That's where basically they have to run across, so the kids would kick the ball. But yeah, it was just great fun. I mean, it still is great fun, just obviously with the way things are in the world, certain things have to change, but that's just part and parcel of how the world goes, you know?
Yeah, I think the main culture shock to me, because obviously, even when I was growing up as a young kid playing, footballs were heavier as well. They're now lighter, but you're not allowed to hit the ball until a certain age group. And I was like, oh shit, this had to be told to me.
What was your ball of choice? Not, that sounds a bit strange, but what was your ball of choice when you're playing?
Oh, when I was a kid?
Yeah.
Mitre were the big ball whenever the Premier League started. Yeah. So that's what I would have used.
Well, that was the funny part. Yeah, it was the Mitre Moldmaster. It was like a light ball, but it was just bricks all the way. You always knew when a kid get hit on Monday morning when you went to school with a big mark on my face, the Mitre thing would still be there because somebody blurted it off them. But just those kind of things were madness. But you got through it. You were all right. It was all part of the fun and games.
We used to have a Mitre ball in school, but it was like an all-weather ball. So you could play. We had a gravel playground, basically.
Yeah, that's what we did as well. We did the same,
So we had that, and there was one ball just thrown out. At lunchtime, the teacher would go, there, fuck off. And I actually have a bit of a chip out of one of my tooth because I got one on the face in P6. So that's not real.
You probably deserve it, though, you're right.
No, what happened was somebody kicked it and said, watch out, and I turned around. If they had said, watch out, I would have got it in the back of the head. I turned around, boom.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, right? Oh, there's someone at my front door, but the kids are answering, so we're all right. I'll tell you, so hope they're all right. My wife's upstairs.
We can pause if there's an emergency. It's fine.
Well, I need to go get another beer, so we have to pause in 2 minutes. Well, it's funny you mentioned that about back in school. I remember I was working for the SFA and I got assigned a session. It was basically 12 to 1 at a school that was just 10 minutes down the road for us. Not even that, it was probably a 5 minute walk. And I shows up the first day, like, hey, what going on? The janitor just basically gives me, I felt like Jesus Christ, he'll give me a bag of three balls and a couple of cones and said, go feed the 5,000. I'm like, yep, no worries, mate, I'll do it. So there's a huge field that was basically quadrant off with the gate. And yeah, there was three fields of ball for each field. And what you had to do is you just have to make sure no one killed themselves, no kids get any fights. But yeah, that was the other part as well. You learn crowd control at that point. If you can control about 100, 150 high school students with three balls, you're totally fine, mate. You're totally good. And that was a good grounding back then.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, one of my jobs is like an MC and doing comedy is crowd control. So, but dealing with adults who you can just do heckle put downs is fine. But you're dealing with, like, some of the camps I worked with the kids, it was over 100 kids on some camps. And you're just like, right, let's do this. Let's get everybody in and let's, have a bit of fun with them. Explain to them at the start of the camp, I'm the coach. This is what we're going to do. If you need me, you call me this. If I'm going to tell you what to do. If you got any questions, don't be afraid to ask. B, it's like friendly yet affirmative, that kind of thing. Right, lads, we are here to learn, so let's do that. And then the fun becomes more into it once they've developed their skill. I'm just like, once you've done this that I've asked you to do, we'll have a bit of crack. And then the same thing is all the games are invented. So on the Challenger camps, we play games. We're tricking the kids into using the skills they've just learned. So they think it's like downtime, but they're actually demonstrating the skill you've just taught them.
Yeah. And that's the exciting part there. I mean, what I always do when I'm looking for a coach, it's obviously important to have experience or certificates, all that kind of piece there. But the big thing as well is just the personality to do it, because a lot of times it's just, if you're caring, you're saying the right words, you've got a bubbly personality, people will follow you. Like, I've seen some coaches who have an amazing qualifications, great background, but you put them on a field and you're like, yeah, you know what, you probably can only coach maybe 16 and up because, you have a bad personality in that part there. And a lot of coaches as well, and I try and like emphasize this to go, well, I don't really want to work with 3 and 5 year olds or 7 or 8 year olds. I want to work with the elite. There's more development that happens in that younger age group. And I know that from having kids. how kids learn, they grow, they develop, you can have a much bigger impact in that younger age group than you can in an older age group, because a lot of the skill sets are already there. Usually the older age group is really a mentality part and reinforcing, whereas the young kids, world's your oyster, mate, world's your oyster.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I mean, I went broad spectrum and I taught all age groups. So the first year I was there, I was asking for different age groups every week. I was like, look, I haven't taught them, let me try that. And it was great. So I went everything from mini kickers right up until, you know, you're under 16s and stuff. And it was a great experience to learn how to deal with different groups of kids, because I don't have any kids myself, and my previous experience of coaching
none that you know of, maybe in a couple of years time they'll be, who's that knocking at the door?
Who's that
ringing the bell?
Don't jinx me. I've been in many countries.
It's funny actually, I'm jumping on another very quick story. I feel like frigging Jack and Ori here, but I had that one time. I was staying with my family in Arizona. I came home on the Thursday and there was the mum was sitting there and a girl I didn't recognize, only had one other kid. And she was in floods of tears, but they were happy tears. When she was basically 17, 16, she had a kid and she adopted the kid out. The kid eventually found them, they were reunited. And I literally walked in that moment, which was, honestly, it was amazing. Like, you know, I just seeing how happy she was and random crazy stuff, mate. But just, yeah.
And this just so happened to be the week you're staying in the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, now I keep going on with other crazy stories. I did have a party in a 50 Cent's house that I went to. And that was just absolutely bizarre. Now, I'm going to clarify this. 50 Cent was not in the house when I was there. It was his entourage. It was the same house.
Hang on. Do you mean like 50 Cent is in the house or like actually on the premises? He wasn't there.
No, he wasn't on the premises. It was the same house. Cool. Mike Tyson owned the house before him. And then 50 Cent took it over. If you look on YouTube, you'll see these videos on Cribs. But there was a couple of lads. There was three lads that were working in a town just outside of where this was. Met them, went down. I was actually a manager at the time, checking in on the guys, having a chat. So they had a little apartment and where they were staying. They said, hey, listen, you want to just stay here? I was like, yep, no worries, I'll drive back up in the morning. So I wanted to reward them, see if they're getting, took them for dinner, you know, just looking after the staff. We're out and they said, Greeno, do you want to go to a party in 50 Cent's house? And I'm like, if we're going to a party in 50 Cent's house, I'm trebling your wages on Friday. Don't worry, lads, I'll take care of you. So we pulls up to these gates. One of the lads was a DD. Security guy comes out, you know, blah, 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 blah. Nope, can't let you in. And then something happens. They let us in, drove down. And the driveway was the length of Gibraltar, mate. Huge driveway. Get down there. Beautiful girls come out, open the door. We go in. They basically had an indoor swimming pool, an indoor basketball court, nightclub, the whole nine yards. There was probably about maybe 30 people there. But it was just absolutely bonkers, mate, just to be in there.
And the nightclub in the house, that's mad. I mean, one of the things about it as well as and it's part of the challenger training is obviously because you have kids coming, you know, university kids and coaches coming over, and you have local coaches as well. But one of the things that you have to be told about is some of the homes you're going to be staying in. It's like, lads, you might be sleeping in a caravan at the back, and you might be staying in a 15 bed mansion. It's just you know, and the great thing one of the things I really like that a challenger reinforces is basically how to behave yourself and how to interact. I mean, you're staying in a stranger's home. So it's the first thing I used to always do when I went to every house, you know, because we used to do this as part of the training. We'd be like, now, what's the first thing you should do when you go to somebody's house? And people just be, what's the first thing you should do? And somebody was just like, ask for the Wi-Fi code. And I was like, you are fired. Get out.
Yeah.
First thing you should do is ask is their house rules, basically, because these people are inviting you to your home. It's great.
That's the funny part there as well. I mean, I look back to when I was doing the camps, you didn't have social media, you didn't have that. So you had to interact with the kids. And that's why most of the families do it. Most of the families do it because they want to have experience for their kids to hang out. And if you can hang out with the kids, give them a bit of culture, talk where you've been, it makes a huge difference. And that's the one part as well. And I don't mind saying this. I always say, if you've been in a region for maybe 3-4 months or 5 months, whatever it is, and no one's going to take you in or look after you. No one's going to take you in. You have to look inside yourself as to why that is. There's so many good people there. A coach like, yeah, I'll stay with this family would have me back. And I'm not saying that you deserve a free ride everywhere. I'm just saying if someone enjoys your company and have you back, then it means you've done a good job. If there's like no contact, they don't speak to you after that, you have to look within yourself and go, you know what, I probably didn't do as good a job as I could have, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I always have that. I'm still in touch with quite a few of the families who were good enough to put me up. And one of the things I would always ask is when people say, you know, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, what do you want to show me? I'm like, show me something about your town. Show me something that's really good. Show me show me what you'd show a tourist, because that's what I am. I'm here for the week, so let's do it. And I really liked, I didn't want to sit in my room on my computer. I wanted to hang out with the kids and be shown the place. I got really lucky. Actually, that Timmins camp that I was on with you, I stayed with the family, and the guy I stayed with owned a skateboard company. They had a half pipe built in their barn so they could skate in the wintertime when it's freezing, and they could use their BMXs. I was in a place that had basically an indoor skate park. It was great fun. Yeah. So I skateboarded years ago when I was a kid.
You and Tony Hawk back in the day?
Me and Tony Hawk back in the day. Probably lucky as well that I didn't do as much on it as I wanted to, because I wouldn't have been coaching nobody with a broken leg.
Yeah, but that's the whole part. The families make it, mate. The families are absolutely standing. One of the things that, you know, my wife and I, we did up until we ran out a little bit of room. We used to always host coaches. Anytime someone came in from America, you know, I would never put them up in the hotel the first night. I would always have them stay with us just so we can meet them. And it sounds mad, just little things like how courteous they were, you know, did they make the bed in the morning? I used to do all that stuff because I'm thinking, if I'm their boss and they don't do that for me, I'm not saying they have to under pressure, but if you don't act that way with me, then you're going to be terrible with host families. Because every family is different, but how you carry yourself makes a huge difference.
All right. Well, speaking of families, I think this can lead beautifully onto our story before we let you go. I did promise this at the start of the episode where we would talk about the unicorn. Right. So we'll get the real version of events, and then we'll do basically my version of events. Alex, please tell the people at home, why do I call you the unicorn?
You call me a unicorn because I'm basically, I was raised in a practicing Roman Catholic, and I support Rangers, which is, a few people have probably chucked teas at them and they've dropped stuff. Somebody's crashed their car. You've done something bad, but it's, full disclosure.
So where the unicorn came from was basically Alex told me this, and I said, I'm going to call you. I said, you're like a unicorn. And he said, why are you calling me unicorn? I said, because you're like a Catholic Rangers fan. You don't fucking exist.
Yeah.
That's where we got the idea from. So Alex told me basically this story about how he was raised. And you told me a story where you told me you wore a Rangers top to mass one time.
That is true.
This is Alex in Glasgow in what, the 1980s? When was this, when you were a little kid?
1980s and 1980s and early 1990s. So basically what happened in my family is that I started off, my dad was a Rangers fan, and as was his granddad. It was weird though, back then, I've got three or four uncles, they're all Celtic fans. My dad back then, he wouldn't tell anyone or let anyone know he was a Rangers fan. He would basically just kind of keep it on the wraps. My granddad was then, he was a Protestant, he was a Rangers fan, but my grandmother was Catholic and she raised all the boys Catholic, and my three uncles were Celtic fans, my dad was a Rangers fan, but no one spoke about it. So it was a strange time. I mean, like, I would literally, and I when I was five or six when I went to my first Rangers game, I didn't know any of the bigotry, I didn't know any of that kind of stuff. I just went along, went to the games, and I went to Catholic school and all that kind of part. I was maybe lucky, I would say, in that that was back when Rangers done nine in a row, and most of the times, you know, I was happy as opposed to the other kids that weren't happy. But either way, I used to get like friendly bumps in the head, like if Rangers won or Rangers lost. But don't my eyes up, because, you know, again, as I said before, I don't see it that way. I just see a person's a person, and whatever you do, whatever you support, that's up to you, you know.
Well, my joke about that, when because I said to you, I was in Scotland, I was in Glasgow last year doing a gig. I did the Cottier's Theatre, which is like an old church, which was class. And one of the first things I said to the audience in Glasgow was, I said, I've just traveled over here from Northern Ireland, because I said, just to see how proper sectarianism works. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just the insight to it.
Because Glasgow was still very much a divided city. And basically I explained to the people, I think the joke that I used was, I said that, basically the difference between Ireland and Scotland, I said, sectarianism is like whiskey. We invented it, but fucking hell, you've perfected it.
That's not a bad shout, mate. You're pretty close right there. I mean, it's I think the other part as well, which has grown on that, is the whole social media. I think the difference and changes that have happened there in terms of spreading views and kind of pushing it out. I mean, one of the hardest parts that I had actually was, after I moved here, I had a few friends I went to school with for whatever reason, they were so far into, you know, their own ideas that they were like, well, we can't be friends with you anymore. I'm like, why? You know, I mean, so, well, we don't agree with what you do. I don't agree with you being Catholic, supporting Rangers. But I'm like, you know, hey, I just see football. That's all I care about. You know, I mean, I don't care about the other stuff. It's just that piece there. And I think that, I mean, it's hard to say. There has been some progression on it. I mean, but you just don't know how it's all going to shake up.
Here, mate. Look, I know you said. I mean, it probably couldn't have been easy growing up as a Rangers fan in Glasgow, but it could be worse. I know Hibs fans. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny that part there. It's yeah. I've been to Easter Road actually, but yeah, I get what you mean. Or even Hearts fans. Hearts fans are having a tough time with it.
It was pointed out to me, actually. Somebody said that the derby in Edinburgh is supposedly more sectarian than the derby in Glasgow.
Yeah, someone said that. I've never actually seen it. I mean, the one thing I will say, though, is I've been to... It's totally different from American sports. Like I've been to Red Sox-Yankee, and people are like, oh, that's all going to kick off. It's all crazy. But you're sitting all the Yankees and Red Sox fans all together. It's probably a better thing that way. So somebody might go, ooh, you suck, or... Your team, no one ever curses or swears over here. They just say that part. Whereas the Rangers and Celtic game is a little bit more different, and the atmosphere is a little bit more different again. But yeah, whole new world, mate.
Well, one of the things, obviously, because if you go to, I mean, any soccer match has an away team and a home team. What we do is, I'll send you a clip of this when we get off. At Gaelic football matches, whenever we go to county games, so 32 counties in Ireland, and the basic thing is, you support where you're from. You don't pick your team. Wherever you're from, that's your team. And the fans all sit together. We don't segregate the fans.
Yeah.
Now, what that means, the crack in the stands is brilliant. Like the slagging matches and stuff and the giving off to each other. But it's very much an Irish sense of humour thing. There's the threat of violence without the violence.
Yeah, and that's the whole part there, which is good. But yeah, that's the key part of it. You know, I mean, just having a fun over that banner. And I'd say probably, and I could be wrong here, I'd probably say 90% of fans in Glasgow have that banter. Is probably a 10% or a little bit extremist, and that's where you get your issues on, you know.
But I think, I mean, if you're talking about extreme fans, every team has that 1% or the 5%. I mean, teams in Serie A and Italy have ultras and that kind of mad shit. You're just like, lads, it's football, calm yourselves. It's a sport. It's supposed to be a positive promotion. It's supposed to teach people life lessons, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's funny. I remember reading Paolo Di Canio's book, and that's what he said. Paolo Di Canio used to do his training midweek. And then a Friday would go fight with the ultras versus all sorts of people, and then Sunday would show up for training with Lazio or the game with Lazio. It's just crazy. But yeah, I mean, I'd like to think as the world gets bigger and people get more educated and more rounded, it's, you know, things will get better in that respect. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough because when I was growing up, I grew up in a mixed area. So even though there are lots of parts of Northern Ireland and the border was very prevalent, and we had the first Scottish person I ever met was a soldier. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, that was the first spot, because these poor bastards were fucking deployed onto our streets because the Tories had shut down the shipyards in Glasgow. You know what I mean? We're like, where's the next job? Get in the boat, lads. You're going to Belfast.
You'll be all right. Head off to Belfast. Everything's going to be good, lads. Yeah, just frigging madness, mate. Madness.
Yeah, but I think one of the great things about Challenger as well is that if people are from maybe those situations, or they're from maybe somewhere inner city in England or something, go and see how big the world really is and how unimportant what you thought a problem is. Go and see.
And you're funny you say that part. I mean, I think that's one of the benefits I've had from being in the US, having more well-rounded views and looking at that part. I still talk to my friends back home, and a lot of it's still prevalent in terms of the knowledge of what life is like really in the big bad world. But yeah, I mean, the more you move away from it, the better it is. Although in saying that, I've been back to Glasgow quite a few times since I moved here, and I think Glasgow's moved on fantastic. There's a lot of great areas, a lot of places opened up. I'd say it is different. It's weird to say it's different, but it's still the same in certain respects.
No, dude, I was in Glasgow last year, and before that, I was in Glasgow 10 years ago playing with a band, and the difference is massive.
Yeah.
It's the city itself is really growing. There's some, I mean, Glasgow always, as I always find, was a really beautiful looking city. It's that old Victorian architecture, and it's making the new city fit with that. Keeping the personality of the place.
Yeah, and that's the whole part there. I mean, it's been class in that part. As a quick heads up, my laptop seems to be dropping on power. I don't know why. So if I lose you, mate, I'll just get you back on.
Don't worry. Well, what we'll do is, you know what? On that lovely sentiment, we'll let you escape, and then I can have a beer with you. And then if it dies, it's no big deal. But I know things are different this year because obviously with the whole coronavirus and obviously what's going on in America at the minute, which is absolute madness. Has completely thrown the normal plan of what Challenger does. But if people are interested in what Challenger do, or if people are listening to this and maybe would look into maybe going out next year, or doing what I did, which was joining up to do. Where do we find you? Where's the best place to get the info? Oh, absolute nightmare. I think I've lost him. Pause. Okay, we should explain what happened there. Alex, you're the first guest this has happened to where the recording device has died. Now, this is the one disadvantage of doing Zoom recordings. It's brilliant. We can connect with people all around the world, but it's a pain in the balls if one of them runs out of battery. But you're back. You stole a laptop off one of your kids.
Yeah, I went up, and my little daughter was trying to do her iReady homework. I was like, hey, daddy needs that. Bang, boom, took it downstairs, so we're all right. So, yeah, don't be a fool. You know, charge up your tool next time you have a call, mate, so you don't have any of these issues happening.
It's perfectly fine. It's no issue to the technical spec that my listeners expect of what I'll be doing. My dozens of listeners will forgive you. You'll be okay.
Yeah, there's only a handful, right? You know, less than 10, you know, you'd be 7 or 8. There's one person out there, I think it's an outrage, he'll crack up. Why is there no power on it? But we'll survive, man. We'll be all right.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be less. If you've managed to get this far listening to these two accents talk at speed, fair play to you.
Yeah, welcome. That'll be interesting. You got to track that stuff. Someone's like, it starts off interesting, boom, man, done. Same with TV channels, sit and flick to the next channel, flick to the next channel. Yeah, you'll be all right. Not the old days, maybe you only had 3 or 4 channels in the TV. You couldn't flip past it on the radio. That was all you had.
Because I grew up, where I grew up at the border, we ended up having 6 channels because we had another aerial, so we could get the 4 channels. So BBC One, BBC Two, ITV, and then Channel 4 when it launched in the 80s. And then we had RTE One and RTE Two, which is the 2 stations in the Republic of Ireland.
Oh, there you go.
So, hey, there was a civil war raging outside, but we had 6 TV channels. You know what I mean? Not the show.
That's all part back then. I'll keep you entertained, like your mum and dad say. Go outside and play with sticks. Nothing on TV. You'd make your own guns. You'd make your own whole world out there. Nowadays, give me an iPad. You can do what you want.
Yeah, no toy guns. That was one of the rules. No toy guns, because that would have got you in a spot of bother.
I can imagine in your neck of the woods, maybe a little bit different, a little bit hard. Yeah,
there was a lot of football and keeping your hands by your sides. But we were in the process of wrapping up. I said, if people are interested in Challenger and want to know more and would like the opportunity maybe to get out there and see a bit of the world, which you gentlemen afford the opportunities, where do they find out the information, or where are you best recruited?
So then go to challengersports.com and follow the application process there. We normally start around about September, October for the following year, so it takes a bit of a process. Most people apply up to around about December. We have a training event we do in January. We bring all the staff down. You have an interview before that, but that next step in January is really to see you on the field, see how else you're doing. And we're looking for staff from anywhere from January, February onwards, and then there might be a lot of staff I might just want to do the summer, and those go from late May to August. So plenty of opportunities there. If we're at challengersports.com, they can find out what's going on, and they'll find my email address on there as well if there's any specific questions, and you can go from there.
Yeah, with this year's current thing, now obviously that would be people planning for next year. With this year, obviously with the coronavirus and the COVID-19 and now what's going on in America, are you guys just adapting this day to day? Are you just have to roll with the punches?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, mate. You've got to kind of look at every single point. So right now we have probably around about 35, 40 staff, coaches are still in the country, because what happened was the virus hit, and kind of ironically it was St. Paddy's Day, March 17th, and that's when it really hit America, and a lot of challenges and issues went up. We probably had about 150 coaches in the country at that point, but as a moral obligation and to make sure they were taken care of, we flew most of them home, or asked them if they'd like to go home to take care of it. So because the last thing we want are people out here, they're stuck here and it's a bad situation. So there was around about 40 people, give or take, that managed to stay here. And it's good that things are picking back up. So what we're doing now is, hey, if our guys that have visas can make it back out, we'll absolutely do that. We're looking, obviously, to hire some local college kids as well to help with our camps and really reaching out to our network. I mean, the one thing, obviously, is the camp numbers we would normally have dropped a lot because of the restrictions, so we don't need as many staff. But it's moving day to day, and we'll just try to do the right thing by our staffs, by our clubs, and make sure all prosper at the end of all this.
Happy days, man. Well, I'm glad to hear that there is some light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully it gets work. I mean, that's how we knew shit was serious over here as well. Pat, do you know over here St. Patrick's Day got cancelled? Yeah,
I can believe it. Same. I think the biggest party for St. Paddy's Day is normally in Boston as well. That's usually where it all kicks off, but. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole part there. I mean, I've spoke to a lot of families, a lot of people who are obviously nervous about their kids playing soccer and everything else, but it's changed the world. It's definitely changed the world. There's no doubt about that. But you have to have faith and you have to understand and believe that it will get back to some sort of normality. It might not be perfect normality, but, you know, we'll make it through. And that's what people have to just realise, it's a case of battling through and taking care of your people as much as you can and looking to get back to normality as soon as you can.
Happy days, man. Well, I'm hoping that everything sort of does work out, because it was definitely one of the best experiences I ever had. And the 2 summers
that
I worked for
Cal. Yeah, you're not getting a call up, don't think that anyway. We're not calling up Daz Matthews.
Hey.
The Rolodex, like, no, that was last in the line.
I've got a mortgage now. I can't even go if I wanted to.
Sure, you can rent out a house, but no, we would love to have you back. If you ever decide to do a little traveling part around America or Canada, give us a shout.
No, that was going to be my next 2 questions. I don't want to come back and work for Challenger. Look at me. I got sunburned in the garden in fucking Belfast today.
I was going to say that, but you look a little bit red. But you know, I just figured out.
I'm a touch pink. I was out rotivating the garden to get ready to plant a new lawn because I'm in my fucking 60s now, apparently. But 2 questions. Can I come over to the training event and do warm-up? Because I'm assuming you guys can need somebody like a hype man, get the crowd going, maybe do a bit of housekeeping.
Yeah, mate, I'd love that part. That'd be a good bit of crack. Love that. And then you know what? You've actually inspired me there. As long as we're still in contact, I'll get you in for the January event. You can be the MC in the Saturday night, mate. So we usually have a little chat. And then we back in the days when I was doing the ones in the summer, we had a lot of ex-footballers do chats and cover that. We've kind of stopped doing that now. But yeah, I'll get you in, mate. You do your set up on the stage, entertain 200-300 people, go from there.
And then you'll get to hear the unicorn bit.
Exactly, mate. This whole unicorn. I know you talk about it. I know you speak about it. But yeah, it'd be interesting to hear and see.
I'll get you recording the unicorn. And also, now that you've tied in some of your lovely gear with Under Armour, any chance of a jersey that doesn't have a giant fucking Union Jack on it?
See what I can do, mate. I'll dig it all out, mate. I'll see what I can do. we'll try and send you a little care package or something. That's what we'll do. I'll do it after this podcast. Tomorrow I'll go in the office, get a little care package and send it down to you, mate.
If you want a good laugh, make it a large. It was a medium when I worked there, but now it's definitely a large.
Oh, mate, don't talk about it. I mean, when I first came out, I was in smalls and mediums, now I'm extra large. I keep telling my mum back home, she, you know, said, my wife, you shrink the clothes, mate. Whatever I give them, they shrink it. They're like, no, you're just a fat bastard, just deal with it. But I like to believe I'm still the same weight when I was 18. They just can't fucking wash or dry clothes over here. That's what I keep telling myself.
That's obviously the atmospheric conditions. It's nothing to do with the fact that there's a lot of long driving in your journeys, and there's a lot of probably truck stop food. So,
yeah, truck stop, McDonald's, all that kind of stuff, mate. Yeah, it's a great life, mate. You're gonna leave it. You're gonna survive it.
Exactly. You'll be fine, mate. Anybody listening to this as well, don't worry, because when you go out to Challenger, it's usually in the summer. You're sweating the piece out, so you can eat whatever you want because you're just burning through those calories. Aye. Don't be panicking.
You'll be fine. You're all right. Come on out here, but get that suntan lotion. You don't want to be like a red beetroot.
Definitely. Alex Green, thank you very much for joining us. Alex Green O'Green, better known as the Unicorn to only me, but from Challenger Sports. Alex, thanks very much for coming on the podcast, man. I hope you've enjoyed yourself, even though your laptop died.
Oh, I had a fantastic time. My laptop didn't die. I just cut off the power to try and avoid you, mate, but I just kept messaging me, please come back, please come back. Got to the stage and I got a little bit embarrassed that you're sure I'll do it, but yeah, no worries, mate.
I thought it was just you just maybe had to go get like a beer from upstairs and you didn't want to be disappointing me because you couldn't get over your little beer fridge, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that has probably something to do with it as well, but yeah, we'll be all right.
Okay, Alex, thank you very much for coming on. Guys, if you've enjoyed the podcast, as always, like, share, subscribe, tell your friends about it. It's always good fun. We'll try and sort out the subtitles for this for the Ouija on here, but if it doesn't happen, we'll get it going. It's an audio-only podcast. So Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, it's all over Google. It's pretty much anywhere that you get your lovely podcastery. So one more time, Alex, say goodbye, everybody.
Cheers, man.
See you, lad.